during the attacks to help relieve their stress and terror. Terror being perpetrated upon them by Israel. Right-wing and Tea Party politicians like Sue Murick have painted Viva Palestina as a terrorist front group for Hamas, and because of IFCO's fiscal sponsorship of the group pressured the IRS to revoke IFCO's 501c3 status. I'm going to read that again so we know who we're talking about. Right-wing and Tea Party politicians like Sue Murick, that former Republican congressperson from North Carolina, have painted Viva Palestina as a terrorist front group for Hamas, the ruling party of the Gaza Strip. And because of IFCO's fiscal sponsorship of the group, they pressured the IRS to revoke IFCO's 501c3 status, but apparently have not yet succeeded in doing that. They've just been pressuring IRS to revoke it. The United Nations recently declared 2014 the international year in solidarity with the Palestinian people and in resisting this U.S. government attack on us. For our work with Viva Palestina, we're doing our part in the ongoing struggles of solidarity. Personally, I'm particularly attracted to the opening statement in the background info. The Interreligious Foundation for Community Organization, IFCO, is one of the first progressive foundations in the United States, founded and controlled by people of color, faith leaders, and progressive organizers. I may just look into that a little more. If I haven't already, I'll get around to signing the petition. They end with, thanks for your trust, your love, and your support. IFCO/Pastors for Peace, New York City. Here are the links. IFCO@IGC.org. Whoever IGC is. IFCO@IGC.org. That's for the email address for information. Their website is IFCONews.org. That's IFCONews.org. I was listening to this program, a competing radio program from Public Radio International, PRI, the other day, and along the lines of other stories that I've heard from this program entitled The World, PRI's The World, that airs at least five nights a week, the story was dedicated to some rather innocuous activity inside Israel. For example, they recently had a story about an Israeli Jew who was uncovering something to do with the Holocaust. And there's a lot of this kind of thing, of course, that happens in Israel. No great surprise there. And certainly nothing wrong with that, per se. But here comes a story just less than a week ago about how many people respond, drivers in Jerusalem, Israel's self-proclaimed capital of the state, even though there are a lot of international rules and laws that were broken in order for them to do that, to make that declaration, capitalize Jerusalem is Israel's capital. Within Jerusalem itself, like so many other big cities in the world, drivers get parking tickets. The crux of the story is how in this magical place of Jerusalem in the Holy Land, people are in the habit of sending in the envelopes or otherwise when they make their what are supposed to be payments or or they are contesting the parking tickets in court, whatever the rough equivalent is to what we do in America here, in the United States here, they will simply leave another note that says, that makes an excuse for what they do, for the fact that they overstayed a parking meter, or are parking in a wrong location, or breaking some other parking law. Many Israelis are in the habit of writing a counter ticket of sorts, responding to the initial parking meter maid, meter man, whatever the worker is called, to their written ticket with another written explanation, artfully and creatively explaining what they were doing, and please don't ticket me. This is, I was doing this important thing. I was doing a favor for someone, etc. I don't have the recorded story with me, but this is the crux of it. People make these excuses, and lo and behold, in Jerusalem, they often get away with it. They often pull it off. So without listening to the story itself, okay, be that as it may and as it is, we have a story about Israelis, certainly amongst Jewish Israelis, who are countering their parking tickets with excuses and getting off. And this is supposed to amount to a clever, usually closing the hour out, closing the radio program out at the end with this story of human interaction and how we can forgive one another, blah, blah, blah. I'm going to read you my response to the Public Radio International website, Public Radio International being the public radio corporate entity which carries the World Radio Program, the world. Luckily, after having found the link to the story, which you can hear when you go to the PRA website, just type in Jerusalem tickets, and that'll bring you to the right story. Hunt around a little bit. At the end of that, way down toward the bottom of the page, way past the other links and advertisements and things, you will find the comments section where you may leave your comment about the story. When I first went there, at the end of the day that I heard this story, and they plugged it a few times on the radio, the fact that they would feature a story, which means at the last 5 minutes of the show, this human interest, light fluff piece, in ads before the world aired. The day of that story, I went to the website, found the comments section, and lo and behold, there was not yet a single comment. That gives evidence to just how very rather unimportant the story is. But I'm going to read you the letter that I wrote them. Three paragraphs. You determine for yourself whether or not I'm making too big a deal out of this, and whether or not it would be worth it for you or anyone else in the world to respond to it. Here is my response. Rentawheel. No shortage of opinions on this matter, I'm sure, even if they do not as yet take the form of comments on the story. At the risk, then, of writing to an absent audience, not to mention the risk of being tossed off as just another anti-Semitic a-hole, here's a very brief bio. My father, rest his soul, was born in Jerusalem, 1915. Turkish occupation transitioning over to British occupation. Fortunately for him, he was away from Palestine in May of 48, where he easily could have lost his life, like his brother did at the hands of newfound Israelis. Dad, of course, was never allowed to return to his homeland, his remaining family, or his property. As a matter of course, in what can only be described as ethnic cleansing, the holy city of Jerusalem is being vacated of virtually all its Palestinian or so-called Israeli Arab citizens, I put a question mark after citizens, being vacated of virtually all its Arab citizens by a variety of nefarious methods. From massive expansion of adjacent Jewish populations through aggressive rezoning schemes to out-and-out expulsion of whole families, including many who can trace their family histories through successive generations of Jerusalemites, only to have the municipal Israeli authorities ignore their claims and hand the property off to recently immigrated Jews. This is all true, folks, by the way. Continuing with my comment, the, quote, undivided and indivisible capital of Israel for all time, end quote, is in reality a cancerous monstrosity of highly regulated and enforced division. There are at least 5 official cantons of administrative residency based on religion, ethnicity, and whatever other categories their urban and federal fathers can contrive for the sole purpose of apartheid and expulsion. Given this most alarming reality in what used to be a truly cosmopolitan and racially mixed environment, the world and PRI treats its listeners to a paltry serving of frivolous and insignificant, quote, human interest fluff, while simultaneously reporting on much more serious matters invoking human rights abuses, massacres, and heart-rending living conditions around the globe, and yet almost always outside the Jewish state. Even stories of Holocaust remembrance-related activities that seem meant to inspire reverence and respect without paying attention to the cost of maintaining the Israeli nation at the expense of its native Arab inhabitants makes me want to puke. End of my comment. And to perhaps clarify that last sentence, I say even stories of Holocaust remembrance-related activities, etc., etc. I'm referring to other stories that PRI, specifically this program, The World, airs. That's what I'm talking about. Al, I just wanted to read that to you, let you know that I do more than just mouth off over the...
And coming up next on Free Radio Santa Cruz, it's... Yes, your favorite, Bathrobes, Pierre's Broadsides, 2 hours of me, my tapes, and on this occasion, the notorious and much beloved, pretty much, Tom Noddy, bubble man from overseas who's dropping in for the last month and will be dropping in perhaps during the summer. We'll hear more about his plans and his latest uptake or upchuck on the latest events downtown, for example, the departure of the great Morgani. With the police, I say, responsible for that particular activity. Stay tuned. Well, looks like someone unplugged the music, folks, so just take a breather, or I will take a breather. I'll take a deep breath, and we'll try an alternate mode. We may get it together here yet, so don't go away.
Who owns a land? Who owns which is a question. Who owns a land? Ecocide, genocide, where is home? Ecocide, genocide, where is home? Ecocide, genocide, where is home? Ecocide, genocide, where is home?
And yes, it is the famous Five doing their famous land for the, I don't know, 250th time on this air show. I don't know, but certainly a number of times. It talks about the homeless, and I don't have Skidmark Bob in the studio anymore to play me the latest homeless tunes or zip them off the internet, and I'm too lazy to do it myself. But if anybody has homeless ditties, homeless chanties, revolutionary squatter songs, hey, get them to me, and I'll play them. The way to do that is to contact me by email, rnorse3, R-N-O-R-S-E-3, at hotmail.com. Yes, you are tuned to Free Radio 101.3 FM, in case you just tuned in, or you're listening to me on freakradio.org. This is the February 20th, 2014 show. We have a special live guest who was dragooned at the last minute so a few hours ago. That's Uncle Tom Noddy, as I sometimes fondly call him, actually rarely, but welcome to Free Radio, Tom.
Thank you, Robert.
And Tom is a community activist, even when he's not in the community. He's concerned about issues particularly around public spaces, street performers, civil rights for street musicians. Is that fair to say?
Oh, yeah. I'm concerned and interested and... And I like it.
And your mic doesn't seem to be working too well. Say something else.
Testing 1, 2, testing me, testing you.
Let's try the other mic, shall we? Just to be sure that, as you know, Free Radio is a somewhat makeshift operation, so go ahead, say something else.
Testing 1, 2, testing me, testing you.
And one more time.
Testing 1, 2, 3, testing you, testing me.
Well, I think something is coming through here. Not as much as me. Of course, my voice is more important, as you know, as the host. But in any case, yeah, what about that? How do you describe yourself, Tom, in terms of your relationship to Santa Cruz and the issues you came here to discuss? I'm concerned about the sidewalk shrinkage, city councils and the police crackdown, the driving away of performers, and the rights of those that remain.
Well, primarily, okay, let me first say that I'm an entertainer. I started as a street performer.
I'm going to give you two mics, just in case.
I don't know.
Okay, so I started as a street performer, and I came to Santa Cruz while I was still in that mode. And I did street performing on Pacific Avenue and in clubs in town and such. Are you going to answer the phone? Or?
Why not?
Okay.
So that's the beginning of Tom's introduction. He may continue as soon as we've chatted with whoever's on the phone. Hi, you're on Free Radio, listening to the sporadic voice of Tom Noddy and me. Hi.
It's choppy. Every other word coming through. It's really something's wrong.
Now, is it choppy for my voice or choppy for both our voices?
Both of you. I can't make out anything. Somebody said spoke the radio station number. And, yeah, it's really sporadic.
Interesting. Thank you for the update, caller. I will attempt to fix it.
Good.
Bye-bye. So what we're going to do is, because this caller sometimes just has bad reception, so we're having a little problem in the studio, too, so that kind of complicates and confuses. But why don't you continue, and we'll, if we don't get out now, we will get out later, because this is being recorded. So anyway, you were saying your community...
So I'm an entertainer. I did a show with puppets and... I called it, not in travel. I added to that some soap bubble tricks, and ultimately the soap bubble tricks took over the show. And so I was a street performer on Pacific Avenue for a lot of years, starting in the late 70s. And along the way, I became interested in homeless issues because I was living in my van and things happened. And then I became interested in street performer issues because they started... issuing threats to street performers back in the day. In fact, they proposed a ban on street performing that a police chief did way back when, and that was like the late 70s. And so I got together with other street performers, and we organized the Street Performers Guild, an organization intended to make the voices of street performers heard on these matters. 1980 is when we...
What was the political scene like then? You had a conservative city council, you had some progressive... I guess there were women who were mayors in the 70s, and there were some sort of Nicaragua, often Nicaragua liberals who were on the council.
Well, they came on during that time. Initially, it was a very conservative council. The only when this thing started for me was Bruce Van Allen. He was the only progressive. And then later Mike Rutkin came, and then later Marty Wormhout and other progressives came. So that changed things a bit. But it didn't, having progressive politicians on the council doesn't settle things for poor people. And so I became involved in homeless issues and later actually ended up focusing more on the street performer issues. And in some ways that was easier because street performing is the one place that we had a lot of support. We weren't naturally all homeless. Some people were professional musicians who would go out there and perform as well. Some people were homeless, and so we were living a life.
How many people would you say performed regularly on the street when you first got involved back in the late 70s and early 80s? How many regular street performers were around Santa Cruz?
Regular. Well, that's the thing about it. Because we kept the scene alive, probably the majority of people who you would see playing on the street were not regulars. They just knew Santa Cruz was kind of on the map. If you were going to make your way up the coast, and you're going to end up playing...
They were mostly travelers then? So you didn't have a lot of resident street performers?
There was a core group of street performers. So if you want to know that number, I would guess there were maybe 15 or 20 people who were regularly in town who would sometimes go out on Pacific Avenue.
Free radio, you're off the air.
But in addition, there would be...
Good, can you hear Tom?
Another, 30 people in any given month that would come through and fill up the street. There were quite a few. You could go up and down the avenue and see many performers per block in those days.
We'll try to talk more loudly. We unfortunately have equipment failure here, or we have connection failure. I'm not sure what our problem is.
But again, you indicated to me that you would be recording that. Is this same equipment feeding the recorder?
It is. Now, we're getting the recording is probably fine, although I can't be sure of that. But I think that the problem we're having is the transmission. So my mic is fine. So I guess maybe we should get a little more cozy with each other here.
I doubt that's going to work.
Probably not.
I'll try to speak up into this mic, and so if it's
that's
sufficient.
Better. That's better, but don't get hoarse doing it.
Yeah.
So
I organized with the other street performers. We organized a guild, and we negotiated with some of the merchants downtown, and ultimately had an agreement with downtown merchants that avoided instituting into law how things would work.
How were street performers regarded in those days? How were they treated?
Steve Bennett had organized an event because they were harassing street performers. He had a band called Street Salad Serenade, and he actually went up and down the street and talked to all of the ground floor merchants and polling them on how they felt about street performers, and 70% supported street performing.
And are we... Were these small? Mostly, we're talking about small businesses in Santa Cruz at the time.
That's right.
And so, what was the problem? Who was putting pressure, or was there pressure? Were the police ignoring the general tolerance or appreciation of street performers that the merchants had? Not that the merchants are.
No, the police were fine. The problem, actually, the only real problem was the police chief.
Gino Peeny. I won't make a comment about a weenie Peeny. That seems wholly inappropriate on free radio.
That's good.
Yes.
But Peeny, he had actually put forward a list of things that the city should do in order to change the nature of what was happening downtown. Some of the people, the Pacific Garden Mall idea wasn't that old yet then. The idea that it would be an inviting downtown rather than
fine. Remind those of us who weren't around in those days, since almost that's everybody now, what the Pacific Garden Mall was.
Yeah, okay. Well, before the Pacific Garden Mall, you'll see some pictures in the 50s and earlier in the 60s.
in Santa Cruz, and it was, you know, a drive-by walk-over, get to the hardware store, pick up some cigars at the cigar store, and get the hell out of here. You know, business district with Rexall Drugs signs sticking out over the top. You'll see that all up and down. It was just like any town USA. And then the idea came up to make things a little different in this town that had newly acquired a big university up on the hill, and they would make things kind of different. Not a pedestrian mall. Not what they ended up doing in Boulder, Colorado, and some other towns where it would close it to traffic.
Santa Monica.
Yeah, they did not do that. However, they had some of that feel to it. So they had these planter boxes, lots of plants, these brick planter boxes. You could kind of sit on the edge of the planter.
They were waist high, too. They were comfortable to sit on.
Yeah,
they were
really nice.
Red brick as well.
Red brick. It's beautiful. And so, you know, people from the lawyers from the county building would come over and have their lunch.
And the poor residents from the hotels.
Yes, exactly. And it was like a community gathering place, you know, and people did. So, and then people argued and watched each other's kids and sat down and, you know.
But was it commercially viable, Tom?
Well, that was the proposal from Peeney. He suggested that some of these people who they saw out there who were being referred to as the undesirable transient element.
Youths? Are you speaking of youths? Yes.
Were attracted to this thing that they had created, and this was exactly the problem. You don't want to have a place that's comfortable for people to sit around, because that will cause people to come in and, you know, sit around.
Without paying, let's say, for a cappuccino in the cafes.
So he wanted to drive the thing as a business district, and one of the things that might encourage people to stop shopping and just sit around would be street performing. So that was just among the many things he named.
Was Gino a businessman himself with a business in Santa Cruz?
Not to my knowledge. I don't know.
He just had that.
I went to town while he was the police chief.
You came there in 75, I believe?
I came in
77. I know. I guess the figures, you were doing figures on the number of homeless tickets given to people living in their vehicles, and they increased sort of exponentially over those few years.
That's correct.
Go ahead, though. So you came, you were in town 77. You were doing the traveling puppets, as I recall.
That's what I said, yeah.
And then it transferred into the bubbles that you are now, of course, displaying so beautifully in the studio, but that no one can see. Can you do it a little more loudly, perhaps?
Yeah, you see the bubbles. It's a mic problem.
I'm just kidding. Of course, he's not doing any bubbles, but he will be doing the next bubble show. Will be
in Germany, I'm afraid.
Ah, yes. Well,
I've got a kid's birthday party that I'm going to. She's going to be 3 years old, a little darling.
Is the public invited?
No.
So you're not going to do a bubble show for the benefit of the great Morgani, driven off the mall.
I'd love to do that, and when I come back in May, maybe. I'm going to be around for May, June, July, August, September. I think that's going to be a good time of year to take up this topic of street performing, and I'll bet it becomes an important topic in town, unless, you know, they kind of solve it before then.
Well, you were a notorious terrorist back in 2003 with your three-lemon attack on the city. You want to describe that?
Yeah,
we're jumping around a bit, but that's fine.
Yeah, let me jump back just so that becomes connected to something. And so we organized the Street Performers Guild. We came up with voluntary guidelines. That became the process whereby performers dealt with each other when they had problems. You know, you're hogging the good spots. Well, we had guidelines. We had it written down how it should proceed.
But these were not laws. These were guidelines.
That's correct.
They were voluntary.
And it also presented to the merchants how, if you had a problem, or to the kid working in the shop who wants to hear his music, but he's got somebody outside playing their music, and he's been there for 3 hours, he could go out to the guy and say, look, here's a copy of the guidelines. Welcome to town. You've been here for a while. Do you mind moving to another spot so I can hear my...
And they were pretty successful?
They were dynamically successful.
You were in town for largely during that period of time. Unlike the present, you were pretty much in town during the
80s. Oh, yeah. I was
so complaints and information came to you.
That's right.
So you would have known if there were problems. And there were some that came up, but probably... Well, how many? How many problems came up per year, let's say?
You know, okay, the idea, though, was only some problems came. Very few, I have to say, came to me. Because the plan was that things would be worked out by the people who had a problem. And so the guy in the
always
shop
the best way to do it.
Could come out, talk to the performer, hand him a copy of the guidelines, which tells him that, look, 35 street performers agree with this guy in the shop that you would move after an hour if he has a problem with it. How about it? And it said 35 street performers agreed with it. And the performer, rather than take it as an insult from the guy in the shop who doesn't like his music, saw it as, oh, the guidelines described, see, we came to an agreement with our neighbors, and you're welcome in town, but, you know, try and get along, okay? And so problems resolved themselves. Many more problems came up than came up to me.
What, how many did you hear about each year? Because, you know, the reason the guidelines were destroyed by the Ed Porter legislation in 2002-03 was because they claimed that there might be problems that might come up under hypothetical circumstances. But I wondered how many problems actually did come up that you heard about per year.
Okay, you, if you go from way back to the beginning until right now, you're going to hear me talk really well about city council members who honestly tried to help, downtown merchants who did their best to get along, performers. The thing, I am like Pollyanna, really.
You're hitting
but
the positive.
But if you want to talk about Ed Porter coming in and destroying a thing that was working just fine, my mood is going to... He and Emily Riley came in and just, they thought they understood something, and this is worse than knowing that you don't. Yeah. Worse than ignorance is this... Ed Porter went down to Santa Monica. He saw something. He saw two things going on. One is they had a lot of good street performers, and the other is that they had a lot of rules written into law. They had a real functioning, and he confused, you know, cause and effect. And he thought, oh, if you make a lot of rules, if you put it into law, then you get good acts because they love to be regulated. And he came, and so he tried to institute that in Santa Cruz. Not understanding that the reason Santa Monica had the really good acts is because they had big wide spaces where you gather a big crowd. And you didn't have a cop that came and broke up your crowd before you got the hat to them.
And that continued in spite of the rules.
Where?
In Santa Monica.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. No, if there was really a functioning thing and there was money to be made, it changes the whole picture. In Santa Cruz, they tightened up the spaces. You know, there were some wider places in front of the old Cooper House, there were, you know, and after the earthquake, there was, but then they immediately, like, chopped it down, and they broke it up, and they made sure, and you couldn't have a decent crowd, and you were dealing, if you were a good performer who makes good money up in San Francisco, or down in Santa Monica, you stopped coming to Santa Cruz, because they started over-regulating what was going on in Santa Cruz.
Now, did you notice this, actually? You have, I don't mean statistics necessarily, but do you have a sense that performers stopped coming to Santa Cruz? In other words, I'm trying to separate what we think probably would happen, and what we feel we fear might happen, and what we feel should not happen, and what we think that we our ways of opposing these laws to what actually did happen between, and I'm jumping ahead now, between 2003 when they destroyed the street performers guidelines, and we have the move along law, we have the 14 foot from the building, you can't be there. Do you think people stopped coming to Santa Cruz? Do you have any evidence? Because you have some, you know, you
well,
work.
I have friends who have stopped coming to Santa Cruz, but. Honestly, that's a good question, because honestly, I can't say that all the good acts were coming until Ed Porter screwed the whole thing.
What about the prior question, though, that you didn't answer, which is how many complaints a year did you even hear of during the 22 years of the Street Performers Guidelines?
Yeah, probably, you know, and there were some years heavier than others, but there would be, you know, five or six things would come to me per year, say, and then I would intervene. Intervene means I'd go out and I'd talk to the performer and say, hey, man, do you get it? You get it? We don't have any laws about street performing in Santa Cruz. We want to keep it that way. And some of them said, no, brother, we have a right to... Yeah, look, no, let me run it back to you. It's kind of explained in the guidelines, but some people kind of needed it spelled out. And the thing is, if we went into court and won all of our rights, street performing is protected by the First Amendment, no question. Goldstein versus Nantucket... Judge Zobel said street performers are protected by the First Amendment. He said that the fact that they receive gratuities does not dilute their First Amendment protection. He said merchant approval is irreconcilable with First Amendment protection. It is just what the First Amendment forbids.
But
I'm right there. I am right there.
Huh.
Absolutely, street performers are protected by the First Amendment. And First Amendment, as you know full well,
time, place, and manner.
Can be restricted with time, place, and manner restrictions. Mm-hmm. And the city council knows that full well. And if we were going to get into a battle with them in court and demand all of our rights, then we're going to have reasonable time, place, and manner restrictions. And reasonable is something that some judge is going to determine. And so that would be rather than having the many, many places we had all along Pacific Avenue, wherever it made sense to us to set up, we could set up. Unless a merchant had a problem with that, because we would have an agreement to, like, leave if we had a problem. So, basically, we had the whole of the avenue. Or they could designate one, two, three, what's reasonable? I don't know, one maybe. Maybe one little free speech zone, which is exactly where all that comes from, the free speech zone
demonstration.
We have demonstration.
Two free speech zones in Santa Cruz, they say.
And they can have an argument about that, which is reasonable. And a judge will help determine which is reasonable, two or three or one, what's reasonable. Where should it be downtown? Over in Scope Park across the street where nobody is going to pass you by or ever see your
And where you can't go because it's all fenced off now.
Or over here in the middle of, you know, so there be, we could fight over that. So I'm saying that even if we fought for all of our rights under the Constitution, we would get less than we currently had, I would have to explain to some performers who went, oh, right? We already had something better than what they would win if they went. I understood it because they were going to other towns and they were having those battles. I was involved in a battle in Eugene for street performers' rights.
What happened there?
Well, at that time, some of the local performers were willing to submit to an audition process to be permitted to buy permits to then they would and it, they
that's
saw
what
it,
happened.
They saw it as an advantage over to them over the performers passing through town who wouldn't be there when the auditions happened. So I really objected, and it was a struggle. It was a struggle all over the country.
Is that what the current status is in Eugene?
No, the downtown, the pedestrian thing in Eugene didn't really work. It never came alive. The whole thing was stupid.
So what?
But that was Eugene, and I came from that to Santa Cruz.
But what's the status in Eugene? Forgive me for jumping a little bit.
I don't know the current status.
Good enough. So anyway,
I came from there to Santa Cruz, and in Santa Cruz I got involved. Because, you know, I told the guys in Eugene, look, if you want to have the right to street perform downtown and they won't let you, go out and street perform. Get arrested for it.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, and by the way, I'm leaving town. Have a good bust.
Right.
So people, oh, yeah, right, Tom. But I really was leaving. I was coming to Santa Cruz because, you know, it rains up there.
Did you get busted in Santa Cruz, or were performers getting busted around the time of the Street Performers Guild?
No, they never ended up busting street performers, to my knowledge.
But they just simply probably intimidated them away at different points. That's what they're doing
now,
mostly.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, Peeny was trying to do this thing, but honestly, when that thing happened, and again, this was the late 70s, early 80s, when Police Chief Peeny recommended that they ban street performing, the progressives in town supported the street performers. He also recommended that they harass street performers, that they get rid of the planter boxes, that they lower them to 6 inches so nobody would sit on them. They had no idea that we would sit on the sidewalk.
It should be said that the planter boxes were of an ideal height to sit on.
Yeah.
They were just at your waist high.
To be settled. And
they were up and down the avenue. They weren't just at a few spots, as you now find waist high stuff, which often can't be sat on because there's gates gating on it that you can't use, such as in front of the Pacific Trading Company.
To get you away. I know,
correct. Anti-homeless architecture.
But the initial architect that designed Pacific Garden Mall intended that people be out there sitting down. Police Chief Peeny and, you know, Trinchero, the jewelers in the downtown and the old money, the leases department store, those guys, they wanted to get back to the thing that worked better for them. They didn't like all these young people downtown. They scared away the old folks. And the old folks were their shoppers.
Did they actually provide stats that showed a change in the business profits because of any of this? Was that ever evidenced in...
I don't know, but I don't question it for a second. Of course, this used to be a retirement city. They opened a big university on the hill. Young people flocked to the downtown, and the old people were scared of them. They had long hair. They looked like Charlie Manson. I don't question for a second. But meanwhile, Leask's department store still had show windows that showed old women mannequins in, you know, in sensible shoes and
Do you think their business did fall off as a consequence, maybe?
Absolutely. How could it not? I mean, and they said, you know, my mother won't come down and shop here anymore. I don't question it for a second. Mm-hmm. Absolutely not. However,
I've never seen such stats myself.
At the same time, other shops were opening up trying to attract the people who were in the downtown, the young people coming down from the campus, the people coming over from the boardwalk who mm-hmm. were attracted by this high energy in the street performing the thing and the music of the Cooper. It was making another audience. And later, actually, Leask's son, when he took over, redesigned their appeal, put different things in the window, and I'll bet his business went up because, you know, if you're trying to sell to a different group than the ones that are walking by, your business is going to go down. I haven't seen statistics, but I get why their business.
And at this time, Neil Coonerty, who was the bookshop Santa Cruz owner, was one of those progressives, ironically, no more in terms of these issues. But he was a supporter of, I take it, stopping the Downtown Association and Peeney from legislating rules for performers in the 1980, in around 1980, right?
You know, they weren't looking to legislate rules. Peeney was looking to ban street performing.
Okay.
I had helped organize street performers, and we had the idea of making rules. Our idea was to not have it legislated, not put the rules onto the law books, but to have an agreement with the merchants. And you're right. I went to Neil Coonerty and to a number of the other progressive merchants in the downtown. Mm-hmm. There was a number of them. And suggested, well, okay, let's forget about those guys. I'm not talking to Peeney's crowd. But let's you and I talk. You know, I understand that you nonetheless have problems with some performers. I said the same thing to the performers. I understand that you guys have problems with each other. Let's discuss that. What are our problems? And what I heard from the merchants was, no, I love that. I love the music. That guy that plays the country, that's my favorite. That other guy, California Slim, I like this. You know, what I don't like, though, is some guy sets up in front of my shop. I've heard all his whole set. Now he's done it the third time. He's still there. Right? That was a problem they were hearing and presenting.
Hence, you put into a suggestion.
Actually, not hence. And then I went to the performers, and I said, what are our problems with each other? Mm-hmm. And people said, well, everybody knows the good spot. Somebody would get in the good spot, and he wouldn't leave it all day. That's the same problem that the merchant was having.
Hence, you suggested the hour voluntary move-along.
Why don't we rotate?
But not a legal requirement.
They called it rotation, a one-hour rotation. You can come back here later, but for right now, give the guy in the shop a break, give yourself a break, give the other performer a break, let him have this spot, come back later. We called it a rotation. It's written into our voluntary guidelines. Same thing with, one guy sets up, the merchant said to me, one guy sets up here, another guy sets up there. In my shop, it's noise. It's both of them.
Mm-hmm.
The performers, when I asked, really not in the same meeting, really completely separately, let's just talk about our problems with each other. We'll talk about the merchant.
The same problem, only for
same
different.
Same problem, sure. Mm-hmm. I set up, that guy
conflicting
set up,
music.
Trying to draw away my crowd. So let's space ourselves out. Hey, brother, let's space ourselves out.
Hey. Amen.
And but in dealing with the Downtown Association, we ran into, it's a different kind of head. So these performers who are on the road, who are, living a different kind of life, they got it. Okay, let's get far enough away. Well, how far away? I don't know. If the guy's playing a hammer dulcimer and you got a guitar, you could be right up there. You could see him and still be playing. It won't be a sound problem. If the guy's got a bagpipes, you got to leave these three blocks mm-hmm. before you're not conflicting, And so we just have to hash it out.
And did that work?
Yeah. However, what we heard from the Downtown Association, not the Downtown Association, because that still involves some of the other guys, but the progressive merchants we were talking to, was they wanted to have a similar idea, but they wanted to have, okay, let's make it 15th every 17th, every, perhaps, no, you guys, don't write it out. If it's a hammer dulcimer, if it's a bagpipe, and so we had to argue about that and come up with something that sounded right to everybody, and then their agreement was to try it out.
Mm-hmm.
And we said, okay.
How much power did they have at that time?
Actually, that worked out pretty well. Because
there were only two council members who were progressives, Bruce Van Allen and Mike Brodkin,
exactly,
at that time.
Exactly.
When he was progressive.
It was a very conservative council.
We're talking 1979, 1980, right?
Yeah, and in 1980, they appointed the Mall Advisory Committee to the city council, which was mostly downtown merchant representatives.
They being the city council.
Hmm?
The city council appointed this.
Yeah, city council appointed.
You were appointed to this committee?
I was appointed as the street performer representative, and my girlfriend at the time, Jan Luby, got one of the shopper representative appointments. Bruce Van Allen appointed her as the shopper representative. Mm-hmm. So the result was there were two of us.
Out of a group of?
I don't know. But they had people from the campus. They had people from Cabrillo. The whole community would. But basically, it was a downtown merchants-influenced group, but at least with me and Jan on that group, I could propose something or she could propose something. The other would second it.
Mm-hmm.
And as soon as it was proposed and seconded, we had to discuss it before they could, like, reject it. Mm-hmm. And so we got a lot of discussion going about street performing in their crowd. And on the side, I had a lot of discussions. I had came to identify which ones of those were the progressive merchants and might be listening to something. And I got to identify also who those other guys were that were meeting at the Old Theater Cafe every morning and plotting Trollbusters shit to go down. So out of that, we ended up with a better understanding of how things were going and helping them to get...
How long did it take to hammer out the guidelines?
How long did it take? Months. A couple of months. And there was, again, it was separate meetings. I would talk with these progressive merchants. I would meet with the downtown mall advisory committee in Sioux County. And then I would have separate meetings. We called it the Loud Nelson Center of street performers. And, you know, and people would come up with a goofball idea, and everybody would bat it around and call each other names.
And during this period of time, there was still street performing going on in an unregulated fashion that didn't involve a lot of complaints, but yet didn't have the voluntary guidelines.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But out of that, you know, the performers met each other. Out of that, we gave birth to an open mic that happened in a regular way at the Art Center Theater.
Tell me a bit about that, because I heard about that recently from one of your performers, Valerie Christie.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, we started this thing. The Street Performers Guild came into existence. We did some benefit things. We ended up with little bits of money and stuff. But we were able to rent that little bitty theater. What do they call the Art Center Theater now? They call it something else.
It's across from the old Resource Center for Nonviolence on Broadway.
No. It's the...
You're talking about the thing... The old India Joe's restaurant. You're talking about the thing that's on Center Street. It's near the Goodwill.
I think it's called that. I think it's the Center Street Theater or something like that.
Yeah, I think maybe.
So every Wednesday night, we would have an open mic there. Because what we, the street performers, came to discover eventually was, you know, that we're not really good with Robert's Rules of Order. Our meetings were like, we didn't have proper meetings. But we could regularly get together for an open mic and mm-hmm. hear each other's sounds and play some stuff. Little groups were born out of that. He started playing with her, and they became a unit, and, you know, those things were born. And we got to like some people who weren't very good, and we got to like each other, you know, And periodically during that time, some important thing came down, a meeting, and now they're demanding the benefit that if we don't get permits, and I needed to give that news. But rather than call a street performer meeting, I'd carry it to the next open mic, tell everybody there. It was the same crowd, and so we would distribute the word in this other format, in this thing that was an open mic.
And that lasted for how long? How long did the open mic go?
That probably went on for 3 years, 4 years.
To the mid-80s.
With Jan Luby as a host, Jack, I forget Jack's last name. Yeah, so they became the hosts of the thing. And then even later, when it finally died, and it was dead for, you know, maybe, I don't know, another 8 or 9 years, it was reborn in that same theater that you're talking about, the Art League,
mm-hmm.
across from a resource center. It was reborn with the same graphic they used, our poster, some of the same crowd.
How long did that last?
I don't know. I'm not sure. I didn't go to that one a whole lot.
That was in the 90s, probably.
By that time, I was on the road a lot.
So for 22 years, we had these guidelines, or the street performers did. I think they also probably impacted even some of the political orators who could claim to be street performers in a certain sense, though not as musicians, certainly. Although I have not a bad voice at different times, I must say. But, you know, and then we've heard the mention of, you know, the misguided Ed Porter. And very few probably people who are listening now remember him, and this was a decade ago. But the real issue is organizing now. I'm looking back in 1980. I'm looking for a strategy to address this crackdown that is happening on street performers. Most notably, of course, in the paper, it's the great Morgani who gets driven away. But I'm hearing also with street vendors, but street performers too are being subjected to. It's really kind of arbitrary. Some people are, you know, ignored completely, left alone, do what they want to do. They even violate the ordinances without any problem. Others, if they're focused on by police, can be badly harassed. A vendor, Kate Wiesel, I believe I get her name right, has been mercilessly harassed by Officer...
What is it, N in it, Wenzel?
I think you're right. By Officer Barnett, a CSO, who's kind of a very zealous cop who has been giving out citations. I actually got a list of his citations for the last 2 months. Smokes,
this idea,
you know,
that there would be that, you know, if you, I kept telling them at these downtown association meetings, if you put it into the law books, and I said to city council people, if you put it into the law books, you're going to have to, you know, administer it equally across the board. That's crazy. When we had a neighborhood agreement, and some guy got a spot in front of a shop, and she hated his music, but she could be persuaded, for the good of the larger picture, to tolerate it for an hour, and then ask him to move along. That worked for 20 years.
Voluntary guidelines.
Voluntary guidelines. However, if you make it a law, then you're going to have to also chase that beautiful harpist who came out at Christmas time and filled the downtown with joy and heavenly. It was just, but no, she's got to go because that guy has his turn. He's going to be able to bang his guitar in front of your shop now. When it was voluntary guidelines, really, he could ask, but in practice,
much more flexible.
It was a lot more flexible. If nobody asked her to go, and that same thing happened with Morgani in those days. If he wants to be there for 2 hours, the marimba group, it takes them most of the hour to set up and break down. An hour restriction was crazy for them, but it was a guideline, and really there were no complaints about it. It just went until it made sense, and then it left. There weren't any complaints. But once they put it in law, then you have, and they put 1 hour in law, and everybody, the harpist, Morgani, the guitar banger, the everybody, you like them, you don't like them, everybody, and of course nobody's enforcing that and hammering it out. Nobody's doing it. Instead, they're picking and choosing the ones that they like. And then that's what you can't do. And that's as soon as we get a decent case into court, as soon as somebody is around long enough and really wants to take this case into court, I'm hoping it's not a guitar banger. I'm hoping it's somebody that plays the guitar beautifully, or somebody that the community supports, somebody that people get it. So it's not a complicated issue when the public trial happens.
They can get behind it.
Newspapers,
yeah.
And they'll say, look, everybody likes Morgani. Why are they chasing him away? I don't get it.
It's the law.
It's the law. Absolutely.
Right.
Must be chased away. Or maybe we should reconsider having such a law. In this case, Morgani actually wasn't being chased away because people liked or didn't like him. He was being moved because he was playing up against the...
Explain who Morgani is to those who don't know.
Great Morgani was a stockbroker. He was a stockbroker.
Really?
Yeah.
Hmm.
And then he retired early. And then he said he didn't really have, he had money, but he didn't have, you know, much going on in his life. He said you have to have a purpose. And eventually he let his crazy side out, and he designed these, like, really wacky costumes. He plays accordion,
mm-hmm.
and he knows standard tunes, and he knows other stuff. And he made these crazy costumes. He costumed himself, a little stand he gets up on so he can be seen better.
And his accordion.
And his accordion.
Mm-hmm.
And he's got thousands of these costumes. He hand sews them.
Wow.
He just like makes these crazy big spikes coming off them, and people come, you know, tourists to Santa Cruz are taking pictures of him, taking pictures of themselves with him. He's like this icon in town now, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And for a long time, 17 years, he's been out there doing this.
Yet on today's paper, the picture had him goodbye to Morgani, and he was being and you were in that paper as well.
Yeah, because a police officer came to him on Sunday and told him that he's playing too close to this building.
Within 14 feet of a building.
Yeah, and it used to be 10 feet. And it doesn't matter if it's 10 or 14 feet.
Del Williams, I believe, is the building involved, right?
Yeah, and he had a letter from Del Williams that said he could be there. But that doesn't matter either.
Of course not.
It shouldn't.
Merchant can't get permission
to
play on the sidewalk.
I don't know why people get so confused about that. It's a public sidewalk. It's not their front yard.
Mm-hmm.
It's like when we were going to...
Although I think they own the sidewalk and are responsible for the upkeep, but they can't. They have to allow...
They own the sidewalk.
They have an easement on it. I'm not sure what the story is. There's some kind of
responsibility.
Some kind of property right
it's
or something.
It's still a public...
But it's public right away, yeah.
In fact, people get confused. They think that they have this right because it's their front yard. People used to say that. America used to say that about Nicaragua and Mexico. This is our front yard.
Yeah, right.
So we can't have that going on here. No, it's not. It's our neighbor's property. You bastard. Okay, but so these merchants do not have any right
mm-hmm.
about the site. In fact, a federal district court judge, Zobel, said in Goldstein versus Nantucket that in Nantucket they had merchants on the advisory committee that allowed or disallowed performers to have permits to perform.
And that was improper.
What Zobel said was that merchant approval is irreconcilable with First Amendment protection. It is just what the First Amendment forbids.
Sure.
Merchants cannot have any say about who performs in front of their shop.
Of course.
May not, by law, have any say.
Conflict of interest.
That's why, and this argument really helped me carry the day over and over, why I said they shouldn't put it into law.
But it,
you put the rules into law, you can have no say about who's out there. But I think you should.
And you think this argument...
Wait a second. Let me see,
sure.
See this through
go
so
ahead.
People understand.
Uh-huh.
I think that the merchants should have some say as neighbors, mm-hmm. as the ones who have to hear the guy's songs.
Mm-hmm.
I think, and I don't mean the owner of the property, the kid working the counter mm-hmm. today mm-hmm. should be able to come out and say, man, I have a headache. Do you mind to not playing today? Or play Misty for me? Or... your hour is up. He should be able to express himself any way he wants to about these. If we're neighbors and we're not calling in a cop to negotiate the law in this instance, if we're just neighbors, my next door neighbor used to hate it when I would play country music when I was out in the garden. I'd just blare it out. I'd open my front door and blare it out. He couldn't stand that, and besides, he worked nights. And he talked to me, and he said, man, do you mind? Well, there's no law. There's a nighttime ordinance about sound, but there's no law. He can't resort to the law to make me turn that off. But he doesn't need to. He's my neighbor. No problem. I'll get some earbuds.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, by the way, you know when you put your trash barrels over where I got the sweet peas growing on the fence? Do you mind moving those? We can make any kind of agreements we want with neighbors. But if we're going to involve a cop, if we're going to involve the law books, we're going to do it by the Constitution, the courts are going to... Merchant approval is irreconcilable with First Amendment protection. It is just what
so
the First Amendment
merchants have no power. Now, so is
I wanted to give them power as neighbors.
And that was something that you argued in 1980 successfully.
For 23 years.
And for 23 years, I guess it came up again at different points when you said that there was permits that some people sought at certain points in terms of trying to limit street performers throughout that 22-year period. Or was there any? You mentioned that the open mic, that these issues would come up occasionally, I guess.
Well, yeah, there was an effort.
I don't want to go into it in detail. Well, I'm interested in it, but...
Well, that wasn't a funny one. Let me just
go ahead.
Because Tom Scribner got involved.
Who was Tom Scribner?
It's a statue downtown of an old man playing a musical saw. Tom was a legendary character. He lived in the downtown hotel that his statue is now set in front of, the St. George. And he sat more or less where that statue is, and... did what the statue was doing, played a musical saw, had a cup out, people would put money in it. And,
he's an old-time radical.
He was. But at some point, even the progressive merchants who were now going to make some kind of agreement with us, which turned into the voluntary guidelines, they still wanted us to get permits. Fingerprints they wanted at some point, photographs, they wanted to know who we were. And that was like, for us, that was really the deal killer. No permits. And... No, we're going to go out there and play. We're going to be spontaneous. We're not going to make... This is art. This is not going to be done that way. And so we argued about that, and it looked like it was going to kill the deal. We had everything else agreed to, but they wanted us to have permits, and we wouldn't get permits. I brought Tom to the final meeting I was going to have with these guys. And Tom started the meeting. He stood up. They already had a statue of him in town. And Tom stood up and said... you guys pass this permit thing, I'm not going to get a permit. I'll be the first one arrested. And I just let that picture, pass before their eyes. So, you're going to arrest the man you built a statue of for the crime of doing what he's doing in the statue. And then I suggested, I don't know, you guys, I understand in retail business, there's like good publicity and bad publicity, but you understand in show business, we believe there's no such thing as bad publicity. And honestly, we're in the lowest part of show business, we're on the streets. We could really use some publicity. And I think if you bust the guy you built a statue of I think we get publicity.
Now we're going
to... ignore this whole story, but I think they picked up back east. If you bust the guy with the statue, and pretty soon they wanted to talk about...
Now, we're going to jump to the three lemons, because this... You used the same philosophy, I believe, in 2003 when you went to the city attorney to try to get them to enforce what you thought they'd passed as a law, which at least said jugglers were allowed to juggle. This was a law, but you can't... things that were thrown through the air, liquid or solid, whether you're spitting or throwing a tennis ball or a frisbee, all that became illegal under the Porter No Balls Law, as I like to call it. And so you, for some time, you went to the city attorney, the assistant city attorney, to try to clarify. The tapes were quite, I didn't listen to the tapes. You said the tapes were clear about the fact that this is what the city council intended, to exempt juggling from this issue. I thought, well, you were being pretty fucking picayune, and, we disputed that at the time. But you were concerned about this issue, and you didn't get a good answer, so you went out on the streets with three lemons, right?
Yeah, well, I thought the law, the way it said it was illegal to toss, throw, cause to become airborne any solid or liquid. They put in parentheses an exemption under the liquids for bubble-blowing street performers.
There you go. The naughty exception.
It was really an exemption for me. I couldn't believe it.
Right.
But, they really think I'm in this for me.
The opposite of a bill of attainder.
However, when I got that news, I happened to be with my good friend Tim First, who was one of the Flying Karamazov brothers up in Seattle. And Tim said, yeah, so they exempted you, but they've made juggling illegal. And I went, no, it's about this hacky... wait a second, you're right, of course it does. Toss, throw, cause to become airborne, and he's solid. Of course, juggling is now illegal if they pass this thing. And they were going to have two readings of it. They passed it once easily. If they do a second reading and pass it, this will be a law, and it'll make juggling illegal in the home of the Flying Karamazov Brothers. They were a juggling team that started on Pacific Avenue and went to Broadway, went to Hollywood Films. They're internationally famous, and they're from Santa Cruz. Santa Cruz is a little bit proud of that.
Mm-hmm.
But they just made juggling illegal on Pacific Avenue. Or they will if they do a second reading. So I came back to town. I talked to the mayor and said, you're about to make juggling illegal. He said, Tom, no, you're being... He didn't say picayune, as you just did, but he thought I was giving it the bat. Tom, it's not about juggling. It's about a hacky sack. These kids, they get in a circle. The old ladies walk in the street to try and avoid them. It's dangerous. I get it. I'm with you, actually. I don't think there ought to be a big circle of guys on a narrow sidewalk taking it with a sport. I think they ought to go to the park while they're doing the hacky sack.
Mm-hmm.
Or a bigger, if you got a bigger sidewalk. Yeah. But actually, it does make juggling. Look, read it. Toss, throw, cause to become airborne. Some cop is going to give somebody a ticket for juggling under this ordinance.
And the mayor, who was then Crone, I think.
That's right, Christopher Crone.
Mm-hmm. He said...
No, Tom. Tom, don't, please don't. We have enough problems. He was kind of supportive of some things, but he didn't want to go with...
I think he voted against those ordinances.
Maybe.
Yeah, he and
there,
Sugar.
There was a packet. There was a huge packet. There was yeses and noes. So, finally, I said, okay, do me a favor. Before the vote on that one, ask the city attorney, ask Barisoni, if this law would make juggling illegal.
Mm-hmm.
And he agreed to do that. So that night, the place was packed. You were there. Crazies were hollering. The thing was,
Bare breasts. Bare breasts.
Was that one of the bare breasts?
I'm not sure, but it was around that time. But
the Areola Brigade.
Mm-hmm.
So it was kind of a circus. But at some point... He did ask. He Crone asked the city attorney, "Would this ordinance make juggling illegal?" And the city attorney leaned into the microphone, as I am right now, and said, "No."
The only difference was he could be heard, and we're all having trouble hearing you. Go ahead.
That may be the case.
Right.
So there, I hated it.
And
I expected him to say yes, because of course that's going to make juggling illegal. I expected him to say yes, but he didn't. And having not said that it would make juggling illegal, he gave them the go-ahead to pass it, and the only consequence I got from that was, okay, if we ever end up in court with a juggler bust on this one, I'll be able to tell the judge, look, the city attorney was asked the question, he said it would not, so at least they did not have the intent of making it legal.
Right.
Illegal.
And 6 months later?
8 months later.
Yeah.
I happened to be downtown when this juggler boy... and performer, he was a pantomime, the old red nose from Alaska, nice guy.
Mm-hmm.
And he had this sweet crowd out there that was like, you know, and some kids. And I thought, this is so nice. And just the mood in the town then was like it is right now. This kind of fear wave that happens periodically. And say, I don't know why they do this, but it was going on. And it was just so nice that I was sure the cops were going to come and break it up.
Mm-hmm.
So I had a little notebook in my back pocket. I took that out, and I got ready. I counted how many, 23 people gathered for this kid.
Mm-hmm.
And the seven of them were kids. He was pretending to pantomiming a tight rope. Oh, he's falling. It was really sweet.
Mm-hmm.
Did some juggling, did some unicycle.
Mm-hmm.
And this downtown cop came and pulled him aside. I didn't get really close. I don't want to interfere with her, blah, blah, blah.
Certainly not.
But when it was done, I came in and I asked the officer, so what is it? He said, well, he's on the unicycle. He can't go out in the street with it. You know, that's a good point.
Mm-hmm.
And the juggling, she said, no, he can't juggle. I said, why not? She said, well, Tom, there's an ordinance that says you can't toss, throw, or cause to become airborne any solid or liquid.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, yes, but I was at the city council when they passed that, and the city attorney, she said, no.
Was this Pam Bechtel, by any chance?
I think that was.
Yes. Notoriously, somewhat similar to Officer.
In that case, she was doing the right thing. She had a law on the books that called on her to stop this kind of thing.
I don't think she was doing the right thing, but I understand what you're saying.
I think it needs to be corrected by the people who make the laws.
Yeah.
The police have to... As they did.
Other cops were not enforcing it, but she was. That's the point.
And even just right now, this cop just told Morgani that he can't stand with his back to the building. He's done that for 17 years.
Right.
Bless this cop. I don't know who it is. I don't know what his name is. This is what we needed. It didn't help us that Morgani was permitted to do it.
I understand.
Other people, and this selective enforcement has been going on downtown and permitting Morgani because, hey, everybody kind of likes him. No, yeah, meanwhile, they're driving some other guy away who's
mm-hmm.
trying to make some coin out there.
Exactly.
Who has the legal right to be there. Or doesn't have a legal right to be there. Then let's let the community, let's let people get upset about that guitar player, his rights being abused like that. Let's consider. But they're not interested.
No.
They're not interested in Morgani.
I understand.
And now because a cop did what he's supposed to do, which is enforce the law indiscriminately, we're having this conversation.
Although I would suspect the cop was doing it discriminately, not indiscriminately, both in that case and in Morgani's case.
You think that cop had something against Morgani?
I think that he I'm not aware that he uniformly enforces the laws against each individual in other instances around, for instance, vending. And around performing, I've gotten accounts in the last 2 weeks of Officer Barnett, if that's who it was, ignoring some people and going after other people for the same so-called crime, whether it's a space crime or not having a license. They're now trying to enforce vending.
He's done us a favor by going.
I'm not saying I don't disagree with you, but I think we should understand the full picture. But getting back to
in that case, you know, they had stopped this juggler boy from juggling. He packed up his stuff. He's leaving town. To hell with it.
Mm-hmm.
I went to speak to some city council people who had been on the council at the time and said, look, they're using that law against. And they said, what? And I said, yeah, remember the thing where you guys said that it wouldn't forbid juggling? And they said, what? I said, what do you mean, what? Remember, you tried to outlaw juggling. You told me it wouldn't outlaw juggling, huh?
Cronin and Sugar were off the council at that
yes.
point. The new mayor was Emily.
Well, will you change the law?
Emily Riley was the mayor at that point.
It's very complicated to change a law, Tom. And I said, well, check with the city attorney. He said it wouldn't. They checked with him, and he said, actually, Tom, I've looked over the law, and I don't know if you understand this, but if it's illegal to toss, throw, or cause to become airborne any solid, that is juggling. So actually, technically, yes, juggling is illegal. I know the fuck. I told you. What the?
Did he acknowledge being an error in what he said? Did he acknowledge that
he didn't remember ever saying no to it.
So you didn't.
Of course, it made it illegal to juggle.
You didn't bring up one of my. You should have brought up the audio tape that I made of that meeting, Tom.
Oh well, that I had the audio. I went to the library. I got the tape, and there is Crone saying, "Would this make juggling illegal?" He said, "No." I made a loop of it.
Uh-huh.
I went out on Pacific Avenue, played the loop. That was my music.
Mm-hmm.
Will this make juggling illegal? No. Will this make juggling illegal? No. Will this make... This is Barisoni saying no over and over
Did
and
John
over
ever
over.
Get the benefit of hearing this?
I don't know. Mm-hmm. I announced to the press that I would be out there. I was in front of Del Marette, which at that time was a police substation and host place. At 2 o'clock, I'll do it. KSBW was out there with their cameras. Sentinel was out there. Weekly was.
I was probably out there.
I had copies of the law I was handing out to people going by. At some point, I was juggling. I'm really not a good juggler. I had some...
Three lemons, I understand.
I had some clubs. I had some... I'm scared of the clubs. I had some... at some point, I crumpled up three copies of the law. I was juggling the law.
Mm.
You know, the press likes goofy shit. So I was doing goofy shit, and I was trying to get, you know, some footage for them, and meanwhile, wait until the police would come out and enforce the law against me so that we would have a court case.
And you waited and waited.
They didn't come out. They didn't go in. They didn't come out. They avoided it because I had announced to them I was going to do it. You know.
And the media went home?
The media went home. So I packed up. I went up the street. I found a cop. I took out my lemons. I tossed them up. And she said, "Oh, Tom, are you going to?" I said, "Yes." "Okay, will you please stop to no?" "Okay, I'll get my supervisor." And they wrote me a ticket. "Are you going to sign the ticket?" "No." "Oh, God. Are you going to make me bring you in front of a judge?" "Yes."
So were you taken to a magistrate or to jail?
I was taken to the magistrate, but the magistrate was really mad at me for doing that.
Who was the
they
magistrate?
They hate that. I forget. They hate when you interrupt their day to do this, you know, constitutional right thing you have. Mm-hmm. And so he said, "Look, you were going to answer. Are you going to sign it or not? And if not, I'm putting you in jail." I said, "Yeah, but Your Honor, what I want to say is, when the city attorney, you are not going to tell me anything. You're going to tell me if you're going to sign it or not." "No," he said, "it wouldn't make it. If you're going to sign it or not." And I said, "I'm not going to say." Okay, they took me away to jail,
mm-hmm.
which is usually, you know, photograph, fingerprint, and release. But instead, they decided to mess with me. And so they kept me in this drunk tank for like 13 hours. Drunks were coming in, sobering up, and leaving.
Did you do any juggling in the tank?
No. Mm. They didn't give me any. So I just stayed in there overnight, which is actually, they didn't get it. This, like, mistreatment they were doing to me in jail, keeping me for 13 hours.
Was a mistake.
Yeah, well, it's what I wanted. I needed a little press. I needed some attention to this story. I tried to get it out, but they didn't give it to me. And now they gave me, he spent 13 hours in jail for juggling.
We may have a call from perhaps the sheriff to
oh boy.
Confirm this. I doubt it, actually. But, hi, you're on Free Radio with that criminal juggler, Tom Noddy, and me.
I can't really hear Tom. He's not on a microphone.
I'm on two microphones and hollering.
All right. We're going to deal with this. Thank you, caller. Appreciate it. All right, so we are going to...
That's it, huh?
That's the story of the moment. I think that's all we can do. So,
okay, so I've got the mic now as close as we think we can get it to me.
We can hear you now.
Are you sure?
Yes, I can see it.
Okay.
Yes, I can see it. Go ahead.
But where should I go from if nobody's heard the previous, or at least maybe this one guy didn't hear it?
Well, it's a good question.
So, okay, let me just summarize a bunch of stuff. We were at a good spot anyway.
Go ahead.
So I was a street performer for a lot of years in Santa Cruz. Eventually, I helped to organize street performers. We came up with voluntary guidelines, made agreements with downtown merchants and city council members. It worked well for 23 years. And then in 2002, Ed Porter and Emily Riley changed the deal because they thought they knew better. And as a result, they put a series of laws on the books, which have since been toughened and further restricted. And they've cut down more places, and they're trying to make it clear that street performing is not really welcome here. I'm not sure that they intended to go after everybody equally. They hadn't until now, but now they went after a really popular street performer, the great Morgani. And so there's a lot of attention on it. People on Facebook, people on the Sentinel, there's a lot of attention on that issue. I think it will help.
Tom, why don't you come around and sit here, because then we can both share the mic. I apologize, folks, and I thank you, caller, for calling in and letting us know that Tom is a faint voice in the distance at best, I'm afraid, but that's too bad, because he's really given a great... Maybe we can beef it up later through some kind of amplification system. But now you can be heard, I believe.
Okay, testing 1, 2, testing me,
yeah,
testing you. Watch your head there. So, yes, so as a result of my experience in dealing with street performing issues in town since 1981, sometimes merchants would call me in to help negotiate some problem they were having. Sometimes performers would call me in to do the same. And my good friend, Frank Lima,
and I talked about it right after he got busted. And so I was with him yesterday when we were he was being interviewed by the Sentinel.
Frank Lima is the great Morgani.
The great Morgani. And so I don't know. You know, maybe, who knows? Frank has announced that he will not be coming back to Pacific Avenue. But actually, when we talk a little bit, if they would permit him to do what he does, which is stand with his back to the building. Let me make this is really my central point. The particular law or provision within the law that was enforced or threatened to be reforced against Frank was that he could not stand close to the building. Nowadays it's 14. That's a recent change. It used to be 10. For all intents and purposes, really that much, that's not new. For at least, for well over a decade, you can't stand with your back to the building. You got to go out on the other side of the sidewalk, on the curb side.
You can stand if you don't have a display device.
What another distraction to it? I'm saying street performing. And street performers, yeah, put out a thing so that people can offer gratuities if they have them. And the city attorney was on TV tonight trying to make that point. No. As long as he has no display device, which he counts both as the container you might accept funds in and the box that Morgani stands on, they just invented this extra thing. What?
Someone's out there. Go ahead. Keep going.
But if they would let Morgani stand with his back to the building, I think we could solve the other problems involved here. But they can't make an exception for Morgani. That's that is like specifically unconstitutional. You can't let the guy you like do the thing you like while enforcing a law against other people for doing the exact same thing. That's just, you can't do that. So I think they ought to drop the provision that keeps people away from the buildings. And I don't think that that's as difficult as people might think, because there is absolutely no benefit to any merchant in town that they get away from the building. People assumed it was, and they did that for when I was doing this for 23 years. It came up like a dozen times at the Downtown Association. Some new merchant in town had the idea, hey, why don't we put them all out on the curb? And I would show up at the meeting and remind them about why the last time we had this proposal, they voted against it. It wasn't because the performers, you know, with their political might had won some. It was because the merchants had no advantage in having the performers all at the curb. Let me explain that. If you get a good act like Morgani and he's out on the curbside, turned with his back to the traffic, facing in, his crowd will gather in front of your shop window. If they're really good and they don't, like, lean on the glass or block your doorway, they're at least blocking the view of what you've got in your show window. There's no advantage to having the good acts out on the curb. It puts the crowd in the wrong place for your purposes.
Facing the wrong direction.
Yeah, well, it's he's facing the wrong direction, but the crowd is the key.
That's what I'm saying.
The one guy is nothing, but the crowd is now blocking your window.
And facing the wrong direction. They're not looking at the window.
Yeah, that's right. But let me.
I'm not gonna take away from you. Keep talking.
Okay, but let me say, that makes sense. Okay, so good acts. So what about bad acts? I mean, there's some bad acts out there. No. I'm saying exactly so. So the bad acts. But is a guy that's got a terrible. He's out there. He's bang. You really don't like him, but he's got a constitutional right, and you can't forbid it. But so where do you want him? He could have his back to that little piece of building between the two show windows, singing out toward the traffic. Everybody, every passerby is ignoring them. Once in a while, but somebody throws a quarter. He's there all day. It's no, you know, I mean, that's where he could be. I realize that not everybody loves that. Or what the law now insists is that he turn, that he cross the sidewalk, that he turn around, and that he sing that bad music into your open door. That's what the law insists. They want you now to stand up with your back to the traffic and sing in toward the businesses that are conducting business.
And block cars that are opening doors.
You don't want the bad acts at the curb. You don't want the good acts at the curb. And when they were reminded of this, they voted
the dozen times in the 23 years that I was there, the Downtown Association would bring this up, and they would reject it for these reasons, for their own purposes, nothing to do with being nice to the performers.
And yet in 2002, they passed the move-along law, so they rejected the idea of voluntarily rotating the system you had before.
No, and they did this one, too. They made it 10 foot from a building.
14 feet.
They made it 10. It got a, they proposed and 14, and then they took it down to 10, and they said that they were being
stayed
nice.
At 10.
It didn't. It doesn't matter if it's 10 or 14. You're away from the building.
Right.
You're on the other side of the
passerby. My point is, why do you think your persuasion failed in 2002?
Because they disallowed discussion. Honest to God. It came up before. It wasn't the first time it came up. It came up before, and it might have passed before. But then, instead, they talked about it. And I said, no, wait. I'll tell you why the conservative DTA before you rejected this idea. It doesn't work for you.
You mean
it puts the performers in the wrong place.
Both the city council and the DTA rejected discussion, or are you talking specifically about the city council? Did the DTA actually get some discussion and testimony with you in 2002, or...
I'm saying specifically the DTA. The DTA used to meet with us and have discussion about these
but
things.
Not in 2002.
In 2002, they specifically denied every request to have a meeting with the performers. So they would not hear, because Candy Jackson was crazed. She was really angry. Her business was going down, honestly, because her business relied, it's a shoe store, and it relied at that point on selling the ballet shoes to dancers, and now the internet was where people got those things. And so her business was going down for other reasons that had nothing to do, but she turned crazy. She looked out on the streets and she wanted 100 changes. She wanted the police to break up every gathering of 3 or more people. She wanted them to, the people coming from the beach should cover up more. And she wanted the street performers, and the merchants. Told me, don't worry, Tom, we're not going to let her do all that, you know.
We'll just destroy the street performers' guidelines.
They ended up, because Porter and Riley, really anxious to get close to the, you know, downtown merchants, agreed to everything that anybody brought up at any meeting ever. And they put it into a big package, and they passed it without discussion, and that was it. That was it. They wouldn't hear, and my voice was one of 1,000 at that council meeting who said, yeah, but there's this other thing about the street before. No, if you have your back to the... Yeah, no, but I'm trying... Yeah, no, I... And they rejected that, too, and everything else, and passed the thing like a roaring fucking train.
I remember.
Through that meeting.
In fact, for those who want to review this, there's a publication that came out at the time called The Alarm. You may remember it. The Alarm was a twice-monthly publication that initially paid little attention to this, kind of dismissing the concerns of those of us who saw it coming. But they eventually did a very elaborate spread on it. You can find it online. Just look Google or Bing for the Alarm, and for that, and you'll find those issues really covering it in detail, I think in better detail than the Sentinel. What happened at that time, in the course of, I think it was 2 or 3 weeks, they held 5 meetings. They held special city council meetings. They held special meetings of their task force that essentially rammed it through in the middle of the summer when the students were not around in the summer of 2002. That's my recollection anyway.
Yeah, so anyway, so in some quick little thing, they put it on the law books, and then honestly, cooler heads prevailed. Candy Jackson got this thing, she celebrated, and it got everything she dreamed of. They didn't get the 3 people, and they didn't get the areola thing into, but everything she'd settled for. They got passed in one big package, and included was this 10 foot from a building. But actually, it didn't make sense on the street, and you know, there was some enforcement for a while of everything they could think of. And then it cooled out, and they certainly never moved Morgani from a good spot. Acoustically, it's better to have your back to the building. Visually, he looks for a neutral backdrop, like those mauve building spots, and for his costumes to pop out. And everything's better on the other side. And so the cops, the host, nobody ever bothered enforcing that part of it. So now for 10 years...
Well, for Morgani, but for others, they did all the time. Or let's put it this way. I've got repeated instances of its being enforced, in which you pointed out, maybe a blessing in disguise that Morgani is finally getting... hooked, so to speak. I remember, in fact, I wrote about this on IndieBay for those who want to check the story about Morgani, and there's numerous comments, yours as well as mine, Tom, are underneath that story. That's at www.indiebay.org/Santa Cruz. When Morgani was playing, I chalked on the sidewalk illegal and put an arrow toward Morgani. He didn't like that. But what he was doing was illegal, and the point was not because I didn't like Morgani's playing. He's a cultural attraction. He's traditional. It's good to have different performers there. But I didn't like the idea, as you were saying, Tom, not just as unconstitutional, it's unfair to have that kind of thing happening. Those who are well-to-do, well-respected, get a kind of privilege that those who are new don't. Although you might say, the good drives out the bad. Yeah, but if the good has a privileged position, the new good has no chance to even arrive.
Yeah.
All right, then. I left you speechless there. We're in the studio with Tom Noddy, both of us sharing the same mic. We're getting rather intimate here, though neither of us has spat in each other's face yet, as far as I'm aware. It's pretty good. And, you know, I solicit your phone calls because Tom may have been completely, inaudible for the first hour, frustrating to say the least, although I think probably we would have gotten calls if you were really inaudible. So I think you probably were heard by some. Not well heard, but heard to some extent. Tom is concerned about, as am I. I think you're concerned about all the downtown ordinances. You mentioned that to me. But you are also a very practical person in terms of addressing these issues. And you pointed out to me that, and that's why I'm asking a few questions around this, you were able, we didn't really get to the point, maybe we did with the previous discussion, how the city attorney, Barisoni, denied that, you know, the city council had said juggling was an exception and it wasn't going to be criminalized, that you got jailed, you got publicity. Then what happened was you threatened to bring to town a whole caravan of musicians and performers who would then be juggling their hearts out. Is that accurate?
Yeah, well, exactly. I sent an email when I announced that I would be juggling downtown in violation of the anti-juggling ordinance that the council had passed in the guise of an anti-hacky sack ordinance. I sent copies of it to all of the city council people, to the local press, to a couple of members of the national press, and to all the jugglers I knew. and among them was the Flying Karamazov brothers, who started on Pacific Avenue when they were UCSC students. And
this was 2003.
And they had gone on to become internationally famous. They had their show on Broadway, a number of their shows on Broadway. They toured the country. They did long-running shows in London, and they did a movie with Michael Douglas and Kathleen Turner. And Santa Cruz was a bit proud of the fact that, hey, they came from here, the Flying Karamazov, home of the Flying Karamazov. And now the home of the Flying Karamazov brothers had made juggling illegal. And I went downtown to juggle and get arrested for that crime.
And you were. And you spent time in jail. And you then advised the city that, or someone advised the city, there would likely be an event on the streets coming up in a month or two with a lot of juggling, right?
Well, I told all the jugglers, and one of the Karamazovs responded reply all, meaning his email went to me, and it also went to all the city council members, all of the press people, everybody I'd written to, and said, "Tom Noddy, you're a hero. We're coming to Santa Cruz to juggle with you downtown, and we'll get arrested." And another Karamazov wrote, and they said, "That's right, and it's right after the IJA, the International Jugglers Association, and we will bring hundreds, thousands of jugglers," somebody else said, "like Gandhi, salt to the sea, we shall juggle on Pacific Avenue."
We shall not, yes.
And so then I said, "Oh, great. We're going to have all you guys in town. We ought to do some shows." So I booked the Loudon Nelson Center Auditorium for two nights and said, "Okay, so we'll have the Karamazovs as the headliners. I'll MC the show so I can tell the story to everybody. I've got all the details. And then I'll invite all the street performers in Santa Cruz that are interested to be in. Oh, we'll do two nights because there's so much. Okay, and for the second one, our headliner will be Frank Olivier, another great juggler who started on the streets, lives up in San Francisco, did the Tonight Show. Really funny guy, good friend. And Bob Brosman, the great musician from Santa Cruz who started on the streets. And they would be the headliners on the second night. And all the street performers, we'll put them either in one show or the other show and in little spots.
But on the street, this will be assuming they're not in jail at this time.
Well, so the idea would be we would gather at the and Loudon Nelson Center Park would become our gathering place. My house was across the street from there, so we could gather at my house. We'll cook some things. We'll have a thing going on in the park, and then we'll have delegations of us. We'll go downtown, juggle, and get arrested. And then, you know, regroup in the park, and then over at the house, and we'll cook some stuff. And then we'll go back to the Loudon Nelson that night and have, like, the community join us. And today, 14 people were arrested for drug. We could, you know, carry on.
Sort of a piece-by-piece kind of a, you know, sort of a segment-by-segment series of arrests.
Yeah, and boy, would that be fun, huh? I mean, big bus together, and the community's behind it, and I let the community know, you know, I'm really into this, you know. I mean, Downtown Association, you guys, we're going to be all over your shit. unless I suggested,
what you said you were going to do.
Well, if you change the law, if you exempt jugglers from your, if juggling is not illegal in Santa Cruz, then, you know, I've already booked the thing, so we'll go ahead and have a show. But you know what? We'll change the whole nature of it. We'll say it's like only in Santa Cruz can kumbaya. Everybody gets together. The community supports juggling, and we love each other. And what a town. What a town.
And Mike Rodkin then brought to the city council an emergency resolution. Emergency, mind you, I should say, actually. Urgency, I think, was the right word. Resolution, which he actually got a vote and a change in the law in one reading, which is, of course, extraordinary. It is not usually done on this very important issue of juggling. Of course, the really important issue was that the city had was doing something ridiculous, banning performers, that it had publicly lied about the issue, the city attorney anyway, and that, more important, you had gotten together the political juice to embarrass them beyond belief.
And boy, was it fun, huh? I mean, really.
It was fun.
This is the thing that I think they now believe me.
Can this be repeated, Tom?
I mean, the truth is, you know, because sometimes, you know, you can bullshit. You can tell people, and then I will organize, and we will blah, blah, blah. But
can it be repeated?
What I can promise them is, I don't know if it'll all work, all of my plans every time. I can promise them, though, that, like, I really will do it. I'm not bullshit, because I would love it. It will be fun. If it's a bust, it'll be fun. If it's not a bust, if you fix the law and we're celebrating, it'll be fun. But I am, like, way into getting busted for this, you know.
Are you talking about juggling? Or are you talking about our current situation?
Well, I'll do it again in the current situation. I would love to.
So let's talk about what kind of changes we need in the current situation. Because I know that online there's been at least one. Finally, there's a lot of lamenting of the great Morgani, the accordion player, has been essentially said, I'm leaving town because they're threatening to arrest me at the spot I traditionally play at. But there has also been a suggestion that there's actually a group that wants the city council to consider the following. We, the undersigned, would like to address the city council. Consequences of enforcement of the changes have resulted in creating an atmosphere of harassment, intimidation, and discomfort for vendors, performers, and everyday citizens. This harassment includes threats of being ticketed, actual ticketing for skateboarding, smoking, leaning on city property, playing music too close to a building, playing amplified music at a very low volume without a permit. These are, of course, all parts of downtown ordinances. And vending without a business license from the city. Longtime citizens of Santa Cruz, as well as visitors to the city, have enjoyed the colorful, creative, and artistic flavor that street vendors and performers have brought to the downtown area for years, as well as the extra variety of shopping options with easy access to local and handmade items directly from the artists. Instead of having options limited to expensive boutiques or big box corporate stores, we do not wish to see our downtown sanitized with people who live alternate lifestyles. Three, we acknowledge that some vendors and performers are homeless, low income, or have a disability, and we would like to protect their ability to support themselves and better their conditions rather than making it more difficult for them. We would like to see undesirable behavior such as aggressive sales, littering, or otherwise disturbing the peace kept in check, but not legal changes made that make it more difficult for disadvantaged people to sell or perform, such as needing furniture to display or having to move every hour or demanding permits and licenses that require long-term record-keeping, holding of monetary funds, or fronting of funds. These changes have resulted in discrimination against the above peoples and should be eliminated or else exemptions made for them. We would like to see an atmosphere of ease and fun downtown and believe most of these rules do not need to be enforced unless a problem arises and creates discomfort. Most enforcement should be on a complaint basis only and with a record of the call available upon request. I see you shaking your head, Tom, for that one. Enforcement personnel should be frequently trained and reviewed on the use of discretion in keeping an easeful atmosphere downtown, not one of punishment or any opportunity. And this is a request that people write to the entire city council. The city council addresses for each of the seven 7 city council members. This is online at Santa Cruz Indie Media, indiebay.org/Santa Cruz. It's also, I believe it's probably on Facebook, yeah. But it says, facebook.com/bringbacksantacruz, and that is there too. So it's several places. Tom, what's your feeling about this? Not that the city council is going to pay a shit's worth of attention to this, but what's your thought about this particular proposal?
Yeah, I really like much of that. You said I was shaking my head.
About the complaint, right?
Yeah, these ideas that we should pass laws that then are only enforced on complaint.
Not a good idea.
It empowers
hecklers.
First, it empowers every single complainer in town. More specifically, it especially empowers those who organize complainers. And it allows for selective enforcement. It's designed for selective enforcement. You make it against the law to do it, but we will overlook it as long as what? Wait a second. Their intent from that reading was that as long as it's not bothering anybody, but that may not be how it's carried out by the police or the powers that be in town. They will allow it as long as, it's him and not her. So, no, I don't trust that. But I really like that statement. I really like this idea of this group, and I would love it if there was something that I could do that could help maybe not accomplish all of that, but it could use some momentum, couldn't it? I think this spring and summer are going to be an interesting time downtown. I think Morgani's, the harassment and the effort to bring Morgani back by itself is a worthy goal. I think if there were success on that and the momentum of this fear wave that's been controlling what happens in town was halted by the beginning of another wave in another direction, that by itself is a goal worth setting, and we should not allow perfection to become the enemy of the good. I don't think we don't move anywhere until everybody agrees to everything. I think we are. Let's get Morgani back. Or some other, somebody picked one thing. Let's get one thing done. I think that's a wonderful statement. I encourage people to go to that Facebook page. What is it? Bring Back Santa Cruz as opposed to Take Back Santa Cruz. And or go to the Indie Post and acquaint yourself with this group that has another idea of how our community can see itself besides that wave of fear that's been controlling things in town for a while.
I tend to agree with you, Tom. Of course, I've been pushing this one on the program for a long period of time. Tom, I'd like to meet our new silent guest. He's probably going to be silent because the mics aren't working or don't seem to be. Michael, introduce yourself. Just shout.
I think
yeah.
I'm over here talking to this mic.
Yeah.
Is this one working?
Come on over here.
None
of these mics are working. Only the one he has in his hand.
Well, no. I mean, he isn't here to be a guest. He's here to be observer and commentator on occasion, I think. Yeah. You don't have anything new to report specifically, do you, Michael?
No, not too much. Not too much.
You have some specific stuff you want to talk about?
I suppose the main thing on my mind is there's a series of plugs along the hall at the community center where the elderly go.
Plugs,
electrical
outlets. So you're concerned about what safety there?
No. I wanted to charge my phone. Go ahead with that.
It sounds like they stopped you from doing that. Huh? Yeah. Okay.
No, yeah.
Hi there. You're on Free Radio with Michael, Tom, and Robert.
Hi, Michael, Tom, and Robert. David Minton Silva here.
Oh, hi there, David.
Hi, David.
Yeah, I called several times in the past, and I'm very, very, very seldom do I ever praise any of our government's operations or bureaucracies. But I've noticed that this particular time, the Veterans Administration under this administration does seem to be doing more. And I promised I would call you back this week and give you that VA housing crisis number. That people should have. If you're a veteran out there and you're having not just housing, you need housing help here from the local veterans, but you're having housing crisis, you can get some, move-in fees and expenses and so forth. I have that number now, too.
Okay, well, why don't you give us the number and we can pass it on.
Okay, it's area code 877-424-3838.
One more time.
877-424-3838.
877-424-3838. So if you're a vet, what's the advantage of calling this number, David?
That's if you're in crisis. Like, you not only need housing assistance, but you need help moving in. You need a little extra loans or something else like that. But locally, the veterans workers locally will get you plugged in so that you're paying just a percentage of your rent instead of the full rent.
Now, full disclosure here: have they helped you or someone you know? Why are you giving them this?
They helped me. They helped me in Bakersfield, and they've helped me since I've been here. They pay a portion of the rent here, about 45% of my share of the rent.
Are they? Is there a long waiting list? Is there a speedy process here?
Well, when I did it 2 years ago, there wasn't much of a long waiting list. I understand the lists are getting longer.
Right.
That's why I'm giving you the crisis number, because the longer people are out there, the more expensive it is to get into housing.
My question,
so veterans know that.
I guess my question is: is this 2 year old information, or is there something new about it?
This is something new.
What is new about this that wasn't the case 2 years ago when you contacted them?
Well, 2 years ago I just contacted people locally. This is a national crisis hotline that
okay.
can get you those first and last month payment, down payment loans, or just even grants. Whereas the local chapters could just, if you get yourself moved into a house, they'll pay for 45% of your rent.
And this was not the case 2 years ago?
No, 2 years ago, you really had to get through the crisis yourself. Once you got in, then veterans can help you. Now they're going to help you get into the housing itself. And I think that's quite an improvement. I think they heard
okay.
our complaints, and there is some response. Now, I'm not a big fan of bureaucracy. I think it's just a shame. But when something is working and there's people out there that need help, I want them to know that they should not give up. They should go ahead and go to the veterans office down in Emmeline. Call this number at the National if you need help with down payments. I'm not even sure if the local office knows about this new crisis number, but I was asking around, and I got a response, and I'm pleased that I did.
Okay, well, listen, keep those reports coming in. Again, I'll repeat the number. Grab a pencil
okay.
and paper for all you vets out there, or I should say retired killers, as I like to call vets. and no offense meant to people who are disabled. I do not like that heroism that attaches itself to vets.
Yeah.
They are not heroes. They are victims at best and murderers at worst, and usually
yeah.
both, as far as I can see.
I was in 4 years, and that my third year, right before the fourth winter I was in, we had a secret mission to Laos, and we radiated the Ho Chi Minh Trail tactical nukes. And I can't believe that I was the supply sergeant for that operation. But
wait a minute. Let me ask you again, David. Are you saying that you were part of an operation that actually used nuclear weapons in Laos?
Tactical nuclear, radiating materials.
How do you know this was actually the case? Because this is news.
I am the guy that was the expert on nuclear logistics. You know, in 1964, they took me along. They took me along on the B-52 bomber, and I came back on KC-135.
Well, you may have to fly
to
Moscow to meet with Snowden if this keeps up, David. I'm afraid. It's 64, so who gives a shit? But
the thing is that 64, the war buildup to know that we were doing that much. Most people don't realize how much we were already doing. I came out of the military raging anti-war. But
mm-hmm.
I had taken an oath, and I fulfilled my
duty. So now you have broken
point.
Your oath by revealing it here on Free Radio. I'm afraid you're history there, Silva.
Actually, no. A year ago, I filed a claim of damages to me because of this operation, this secrecy that I had to live under, and that plus the fact that I was also a very convenient rape in an isolated base for 4 winters. There, no one spends 4 winters in an isolated base, except those of us that were pretty and needed to be raped a lot.
I see. I'm sorry to hear that, David.
So I'm reliving a lot of stuff, Robert, but I want veterans to know, hey, you don't have to take it anymore. There is help more than usual.
And the number, again, for those who want it, is 877-424-3838. Thanks, David. We're pressed for time here, but I want to.
Robert, thank you so much.
Yeah, call back if you got more information, and particularly on the longer show on Sunday, more available.
Yeah,
and then we can talk about your nuclear info. Thank you.
Okay.
Bye bye.
Bye.
Hey, well, that's the first time I've heard about that. I know that Eisenhower, that they threatened to use nukes in the French wanted to the military wanted to lend the French nukes in Indochina during the Indochinese War, the you know, when the French were fighting the Viet Minh, is what at least you read in all the lefty history books. So this could well be true, too. 427-3772. 427-3772 is the phone number to call in. Looks like Tom has had about enough for this one mic shit that we have here in the studio. Tom, you're you know, interestingly enough, you're taking you're going to be leaving at the end of February for a couple months and back in, what is it, May?
Yeah, I'll be in town May, June, July, August, September. I'm going to be around.
You are anticipating following the struggle and making contacts. We may have a question for you before you leave, if you're.
I'm ready. I'm hoping they've solved it without me being in town, or solved it this week. That would be lovely.
Wouldn't that be nice? Hi there, caller. You're on Free Radio with the infamous juggler and Robert and Mike.
Robert, perhaps the cause of your microphone's not working is the microphone switch. On each microphone, there's a switch that turns it on and off. Have you tried activating the switch to the on position?
I've searched for the switch, and right now we have our technical expert is examining the microphone carefully to make sure you're not lying, Uncle Dennis.
Oh, yeah, the switch is not on.
Oh, dear. Uncle Dennis, why didn't you call an hour and a half ago? What's going on at that end?
I was listening to the KPFA evening news,
and
Robert.
I see. More
I
excuses.
Find it more
okay.
relevant than your program.
Oh, boy. Well, it's an example of the kind of technical expertise you've come to expect here at Free Radio. Thank you, Dennis, and we'll be hearing from you shortly, I guess, huh?
Yeah, unfortunately, all too shortly.
Yes, I'll see you soon. So we also have Tom is swiping a copy of the Voluntary Street Performers Guidelines, and he can be reached, I guess, for organizational purposes still, or do you want to offer yourself for that in any way?
Yeah. I'm easy to find online. If you do a search for Tom Noddy or Bubble Magic or something, you'll end up at my website, and you can link me and send me an email from there if you want to find me. As Robert says, I go in and out of town, but we can talk in email and talk about what I know and what I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, it's your strategies, I think, that interest people, and I wish we'd talk more about those. And had I... I actually did try to find the... well, we won't get into the problems of the microphones, but... I hope you can come back again. Maybe we can, you know, I will check the recording of this and see if we actually got something off this for the first hour. But thank you, Tom, for coming in, man.
Pleasure.
All right, man.
Yeah, see you, Tom. Good to meet you.
And I think I'm going to take an embarrassed musical break for a moment here while I try to regain my emotional composure. I'm actually glad that Uncle Dennis called in because now it means that you may be able to hear Mike. Thank you, Tom. All right. But that must mean nobody's been listening or nobody wants to hear Tom in the last hour. That's kind of strange. Maybe they could hear him faintly in the background. You know, we don't even have time for a musical break. Mike, you had something you wanted to bring up, I think.
No, just one point that I came around across yesterday when I was in the community for the seniors down there on Center Street. What it is I wanted to plug my phone in and to recharge it, but I actually had to wait 2.5 hours till this class was finished in this room, the only room you could plug in. Whereas there was 6 or 7 outlets up and down the corridor that I could have used, but they were turned off, no juice, you know. So, you know, I always had the impression that these places, libraries and centers for elderly people and are there to serve the people. Not
and you're 67 years old, is that right?
Yeah. And there should be, places...
But you're homeless. Why should we serve you? You're just ripping us off, man. Come on.
Well, I'm trying to add some quality of life to Santa Cruz in some respects. And it's true I don't have a home here. That would cost me probably $60 a night to stay in the... and some of the cheaper motels. So, yes, I'm homeless at the moment, but that's a recent thing. And I'll also get to, by staying and, especially Staying around homeless people, you get to understand them directly. You get the direct experience of their mentality and their you know, and their state of consciousness. So
we have a caller. Actually, somebody may actually have heard this broadcast. Let's see. Hey there, caller. You're on Free Radio with Mike and Robert.
Not good.
Hello?
The signal's not coming through, except chopping. It's broken up.
Oh, well, thank you, caller. I think it may be your reception, but I will keep
It's the same problem
it.
That's come up in the show.
Were you able to hear any of the broadcast with Tom Noddy?
Yeah.
Did you hear the first...
It got clear, and...
Did you hear the first hour?
I don't think so. It was for a long time. It was just choppy.
I guess my question was it very quiet when Noddy spoke and loud when I spoke?
A little bit, but it's
okay.
Different.
Well, thanks for the update. And
Can you hear me talking here right now?
Yeah.
You can hear me okay. All right, good.
So we're doing good, I think. And thank you for keeping us briefed, caller.
Yeah.
So, Mike, I wanted to ask you, Michael, you mentioned some time ago, I think, I don't know if we talked about it on the air, I think we probably did, that the Abbey Cafe evicted you, even though you were a paying customer, and although I guess that you, on a couple occasions you'd left your stuff there and they didn't like that idea. Was there any explanation?
It wasn't. They didn't bring up that. They said I had too many bags.
How many bags did you have?
Yeah, how many? Maybe three or four. I've forgotten exactly.
Had you brought those in before?
Yes.
And how many occasions had you been in the Abbey Cafe before?
Maybe 50.
55-0
yeah.
times?
Right.
And you'd purchased coffee or something on each occasion?
Almost every time I purchased coffee. It's the most expensive coffee.
Did you unpack
coffee.
Your bags and hang out your dirty underwear? What were you doing in that cafe with those bags?
No, I wasn't.
Selling dope, perhaps?
I was only there 2 or 3 minutes when I was accosted by the people in there.
And this was what
The immediate thing that bothered them was I was too long in the bathroom. And they said that was the only bathroom for the men, and I was too long there. And obviously, I think maybe some of the staff maybe wanted to use the bathroom, and that set the whole thing off. I was in there a reasonable length of time, not excessive.
Have you been back to sort of inquire? Are they still maintaining this sort of militant attitude, or have you just not gone back?
No, I was banned out of the place, actually. And, I told them I wasn't a vagabond. I had 5 or 6 different degrees, university degrees.
You could be a vagabond professor.
I could be. I have a lot of knowledge in different areas, and I could be a professor.
Traveling instructor. A hobo professional, perhaps?
Yeah, but I have grown a beard of recently because I've been traveling around the especially...
And a rather nice-looking beard at that.
Yeah, traveling around California
stuff.
Especially. So I'm not actually a vagabond. They gave me a list of places they said... We'd like you to meet your needs. So they gave me this long list of places where I could
Was one of them the coffee roasting company, perhaps? Probably not.
No, I haven't had any problem down there.
No, but that wasn't on the list, right?
I have the list somewhere. I didn't scrutinize it.
Is I don't think they sent you to another cafe.
No, probably they didn't.
They regarded you as a poor derelict guy who needed to be taken care of by some social agency, which doesn't really exist in Santa Cruz, because they're affiliated there
with the Abbey Church. So I don't know exactly what their affiliation is.
So the reason I asked the question is I was trying to... We had this protest yesterday in front of the coffee roasting company concerned with the issue of backpack bigotry, as we called it. Although the coffee roasting company has recently opened up its bathrooms for the first time in 20 years. Some claim they've been open for a year or two.
And they've refurnished the place, I believe.
They did refurnish the place somewhat, for sure. And I'm glad they've reopened their bathrooms to customers. Previously, even customers had to go try to find a place to piss, and they go to Hotel Palomar or something, wander up the street, look for a bathroom in one of the parking garages.
That's extreme. I agree.
Bookshop Santa Cruz. But, I don't know that they are I'm not aware that they were penalizing people for going to the bathroom or having too many bags. Having any backpack, apparently, in the coffee roasting company was grounds for exclusion. Even if you already paid for a drink, is what I understood from... and I may have this wrong, and I want to be careful about this. It was either there or in Verve that this happened recently. Mm-hmm. And although Verve, when we went by there to find out what their policy was, say they did not exclude backpacks, and we got no further reports from Verve. One of the reasons that we were doing this protest yesterday was to try to find out what people were experiencing. And in that respect, the protest was not very successful. We did not get a lot of information. We got a few accounts, and some people did speak up angrily, but mainly we had simply spoken about the coffee roasting company, because they had specifically stated on a number of occasions through their managers that, yes, they did ban people with backpacks. Of course, you saw students going in there with backpacks, although they were perhaps day packs, smaller packs, and homeless people that usually have larger backpacks or bags with them. And sometimes, as I said, it's reasonable to exclude someone if the place is full or something, there's no place to sit. If the backpack is covered with grime and has a strong odor, that might be a reason, but not as a sort of a blanket basis. And that was our concern, that we would... And because this is kind of the update on the protest, I took a lot of tape, which I'm going to play on Sunday, I suspect, about the whole thing. And you're invited to come back, Mike, if you want, on Sunday. And I really want to thank people who organized this, specifically Sir William Blake, as he calls himself, and Pat Colby was there helping out, and Becky Johnson was doing video. There are a lot of other folks who were helping, folks from the university. I think some people felt very deeply that this was a wrong, to ban people of a certain class from a cafe, and not just in one bad thing that was happening, but part of a growing wave of darkness that I see. And Tom Noddy was talking about in terms of how it's impacting street performers. It's reaching out and impacting even...
Well, a lot of it comes down to money as well. They think maybe they're not getting as much money when they...
It's also politically based, in the sense mm-hmm. that this whole idea has been around of bigotry against the poor and the homeless, visible mm-hmm. and colorful people, and homeless people generally, whether they're out of sight, doesn't matter. We don't want them in their neighborhoods anywhere around here.
No,
we don't
compassion.
Want them in the parks. We don't want them in the Poconos.
Yeah.
We don't
yeah.
want them at night sleeping,
yeah.
you know, even if they can't be seen. This is a kind of a fear, a xenophobia, if you will, that has always been around to some extent, but it's mobilized and exploited by certain groups that are now have been packaging as public safety. Or too much clutter. That's the phrase. Trip and fall hazard was the phrase used to stop blankets, for example, being used as display devices downtown. Things you could put your jewelry on top of, or put down to, if you're playing your guitar, sit down on a blanket. That is now illegal on Pacific Avenue, and a number of other items which I brought up in the past shows, and also were referenced by this take back or bring back Santa Cruz, which is the proposal being made to City Council, and a good one, I think, although except for I agree with Tom Noddy, the idea that you can enforce some kind of shit on complaint is not a good idea. I think complaints should be dealt with. I had this experience yesterday when I was a woman named Michelle came up and didn't like one of our signs, which had a picture of a guy with a gun to the head of a homeless person, and the guy with a gun was a sort of an official-looking character, didn't have a badge on, but he had a business suit, I believe. I don't have to actually have it in front of me, but this and the words next to it were "Public Safety Task Force." That's
vigilante, right?
Mayor, well, it's more than that. It's Mayor Hillary Bryant's task force that has talked about deepening and extending the abolition of needle exchange, not just from the city where it's been banned, but also from county areas near the city or near residential areas, has talked about increasing enforcement of anti-homeless laws like the sleeping ban, petty crime, where that's crime is considered like being in the park after dark, sitting next to a building. These are the crimes that they're claiming constitute a crime wave. Of course, they're creating their own crime wave by defining survival behavior or ordinary constitutionally protected behavior in public spaces as a crime. But the idea being that if you do enforce all these laws, you are making it much harder for homeless people. In essence, you're not shooting them, but in essence, you are essentially suggesting that since it's okay to discriminate against people in this way, these people must be a threat, and that's what they're using as their basis for this. There's something to be afraid of here, and therefore having that gun and putting it to the head of the homeless person is self-defense. And that was what this flyer, this poster was about. And it was about not about police doing it. Police are not shooting homeless people in Santa Cruz.
No, but it has happened somewhere up and down the coast where some guy took it upon himself to go out and shoot homeless people.
And in Fullerton, they beat a homeless guy to death. And then they were charged with murder, and they got off completely.
Yeah, that's...
But I'm not talking about the police beating people to death or shooting people. Mm-hmm. I am talking about the cops enforcing laws that put people's lives ultimately in danger. Yes, because they haven't got blankets to cover up with, because they haven't got places to stay, because the places they stay are being awakened at midnight, because they're put into a situation where they're more likely to get ill, more likely to have accidents, more likely to get each other's throats, less likely to be able to sell something that will enable them to buy a cup of coffee on a cold night, if any fucking coffee shop will sell them a cup of coffee. And so this poster, in essence, was blaming the public safety task force, or what I call the public hysteria task force. Mm-hmm. And this woman got upset, and she came over and she ranted and raved about it. And this is a woman who otherwise, you know, often praises the kind of work homeless activists do, but she didn't like this. And she eventually grabbed the sign, and tore it away from someone, and ripped it up.
Really?
And that pissed me off, but she kept ranting and raving at us. And I didn't know what she was going to do next. I was
waiting
after some more. I don't want to have to see new signs every 5 minutes.
No.
And so I told her, you know, there were five police officers watching our rally. From across the street, led by the infamous Officer Azua, who I'm friendly with, but he's also a thug. On this station, I've gotten testimony that he's beaten a woman named Cynthia Kennedy in 2009 in the spring because she wouldn't respond to his directives to move when she said, "No, I don't have to move. I'm fine." He didn't like that, and
his ego was perhaps.
I mean, yeah. This is her account, and you know, I've asked him about it. He will not give me his account at all.
No, but police like power. They like power.
Well, they expect power as part of their thing.
Yeah, yeah.
And you know, to some extent, you know, insofar as I think legitimate authority comes from
reasonable compassion.
Concerns. Yeah. I don't know about compassion, but just a realistic assessment of the situation, whatever seems a really reasonable solution to all concerns. Is, you know,
respect for people, even if they are homeless.
In any case, Officer Azua didn't do any. I mean, he was kind of throwing his weight around. He's a weighty guy like I am.
Yeah,
a little more weighty than
I
am.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But you know, these folks were all watching from across the street. This thing, and I finally went across the street and spoke to the sergeant, who was Sergeant Bush.
Yeah.
And I told Michelle, I said, "Michelle, you know, if you don't stop, I'm going to file a complaint for theft and vandalism. I just am, because that's what's going to happen." And
you're filing a complaint against who now?
Against the woman who ripped up the sign.
Oh yeah, and yes,
I didn't
yes,
care,
yes,
but I didn't
yes,
really. I mean,
yes.
I take in my stride, but her threats to go after more signs, her threats to against people at the protest. You know, and she's a passionate person. And I talked to her on different occasions. She's not a bad person, you know.
No.
But that kind of behavior, I just didn't want to see there.
I know.
And so I went to Bush, and Bush said, "Well, do you want to have her arrested?"
Yeah.
And I had the woman with me whose arms the sign had been. It was torn out of her arm.
Yeah.
She was someone I hadn't known before the protest.
Sure.
Middle class person.
Sure.
Who was a supporter of the idea of backpack bigotry being a bad thing. And that's what we were doing in front of the coffee roasting company yesterday. And we'll be doing it again, by the way, next Wednesday at 1 o'clock, for those who want to join
1
in.
1 o'clock,
who missed the fun last Wednesday, yesterday.
Yeah.
And so Sergeant Bush and his companion, CSO Wilson, a woman who is a police officer, Michelle came up and began kind of shouting at us, and this sort of activated the police's control instincts, and the one who ripped up the sign.
Yeah, okay.
You know, and so they eventually, I don't know what they said to her. They threatened her with this, or they threatened her with that, or they talked nice to her. She was going on about how she loved the police, and her concern was that the police were being defamed in this sign, that the police are not running around shooting people. I heard the same kind of concern from a guy called Razor Ray.
Oh, is that right?
He's a very articulate activist.
But there was no indication that on the sign that it was a policeman, right?
No, not really. I mean, I think he may have had a pepper spray thing. He might have been a private security guard.
Okay.
But there was no badge or anything.
Yeah, yeah.
And she asked me, and I said, no, he's not a policeman. He's actually, it says Public Safety Task Force is what it says. In any case, you'll see that sign again, because it'll be back at the protest.
All right.
I still feel the same way, and I'm concerned about what the County Board of Supervisors has done with respect to the report that the Public Safety Task Force came out with. I don't really have a good account. I wasn't at the Tuesday meeting a week ago when they, you know, they actually reviewed it. But
you can get a copy of it somewhere, right?
Well, presumably, you can probably listen to the supervisor's meeting, and I think I may do that, actually.
Mm-hmm.
Now that you mention it.
But surely you can get a copy on paper, right?
Well, the real issue is not, you know, the meeting discussed it and they came up with some resolution. They probably supported it, or they supported parts of it. So that was that's a concern I had.
Yeah.
Tell that guy to hush up. There's somebody coming in the studio, I believe, is at the next talk show host.
Is it safe enough to open it?
Yeah, I think so. We've got to pull back the... there you go.
Oh, I
didn't know. We have double-bolted locks here. You having trouble there? You got to do three of them. There are three of them.
Oh, Well, I didn't. I only locked one.
All right. Well, there you go. He's having some problems at the door.
No,
I'm sorry. We'll not be able to let you in. Come back next week. Thank you very much.
I'm going to turn off all the mics, Robert.
I want to finish. I'm going to have to ask you guys to be quiet while I finish the show, and then we'll be happy to vacate in time. You're a little early. Not terribly, but a little. So, I can't give you the city council's agenda, because in spite of the promises of the city staff, there is no agenda online for this coming Tuesday, which is relevant because you heard from Tom Noddy earlier. There is a real concern in Santa Cruz that a very colorful performer has run afoul of the police department in enforcing rules that the city council has created, and I would like to see if there actually is some response by any city council member. I doubt it, of course, but you never can tell. So I'll be coming back to you hopefully on Sunday. They're required by Saturday with a 72-hour notice to actually tell us what's on their agenda for Tuesday. So that's going to be happening. I will also try to look up the supervisor's task force response, the response to the city's task force, see what they've got. Tomorrow night is a benefit for Free Radio Santa Cruz, 6 to 10 at the Tannery Art Cafe, which is at, 1060 River, I think? Something like that. And that's $5, you know, come on, kick
or
Dennis.
More.
And I think Uncle Dennis is going to agree to have be pied for some kind of benefit. Is that, do you agree to that, Uncle Dennis? Is that?
I know nothing.
He knows nothing.
But we could pie Robert again.
I was pied at one time. In fact, twice. I was pied at City Council, and I was
That was for $50, wasn't it?
At Free Radio, was for something for $50.
Somebody threw a pie at you? Is that what pie is?
Oh, yeah.
No, they paid for the privilege of pieing me with a $50 donation to Free Radio Santa Cruz. For those who wanted, who didn't hear the Homelessness Marathon, which thank you, Dennis, for setting up yesterday.
You're welcome.
It is available online at http://ku.audioport.org. Again, ku.audioport.org. If you want to hear the Homelessness Marathon, which I confess I didn't hear a syllable of, but sometimes they got some good stuff on there, so I may have to listen
to it. It
was
a great show, Robert.
Did you hear it?
I listened to a lot of it.
No, that's good.
I had another thing at 7 o'clock, so I...
Anything local about Santa Cruz? Or
no.
But that probably...
But you weren't on.
I know. It was a sad moment for me, but the ACLU has a petition online around the license ID plate recorders that the police department either inveigled or were inveigled into getting a federal grant for, and that is a petition that the city council reexamine it. I don't usually have a lot of backing for the ACLU, but when they start going after local issues, I'm happy that they do, and I'm glad they have. Bob LaMonica is running for supervisor.